Okay. So before the break, we had the tedious, wonderful technical specs and so forth, and you saw a bit about how to actually use the tools to create media, and shoot videos and write some email and that kind of thing. What we're going to go through now in the second half is actually admining a server that does index media, that handles the time queries. We're going to go through how search engines use index media and how they can index efficiently. And we're going to go through coding. And the point of all this that we're working towards then is that you can do dynamic content creation. So just like you can do a whole lot of stuff with HTML to actually create news and compose custom content out of databases or whatever, you can do the same kind of thing with index media to create media that's tailored and dynamically generated and kept up to date. So we'll go through the coding that's required to do that, to write the equivalent of CGI scripts and that kind of thing for media instead of for HTML. Before we do that, though, just one more thing about how content is actually structured and how it's created. So what you're probably all used to with media files is streaming and having like one long music file or a film or something like that. What Anandex allows you to do, though, is have lots of little files that link up to each other. So instead of forcing someone to watch a documentary and then structuring a documentary so that it covers stuff of general interest, instead you can have little snippets which introduce concepts, and if someone's interested, they can delve deeper by surfing through it and going through and finding out more information. So it's kind of a different way of actually creating media. You're not creating films, you're not creating songs and so forth. Basically, what's underlying all of this, just think of it as you think of the web. So when you write web pages, it's totally different from writing a book. You don't write, thousands of pages worth of text and put that on a single web page. You make a site and you add to it a little bit at a time, and you structure it so that people can get to the information they want as quickly as possible. So with this, you can do the same kind of thing, but for media. To actually navigate the media, it's not like just putting captions on screen. You don't put sort of useless text on. The text that's on screen is used just, it's used by human users, by viewers, to actually see what the link is about. It shows a relationship between the current video and the video that you'd be linking to. It's also used by search engines to index the media. So when you type a search query, it's anchor text and metadata that's stored in there that will come up in the search engine as well. So it's important to realize that it's basically stuff that shows a relationship. It's inherently part of the media. So you can think of it as a new kind of medium. It's not just a video with captions on it. It's a way of really relating stuff together and building webs and whole sites of video. At the same time, it's searchable. You can have a bit more free text. There's a description tag in CMML, which you can use, kind of like having, if you've got an archive of videos and you want to put a post-it note on a section of video. So, at this point, whatever, there was a red car there, or a lady in red walked past, or something like that, and it doesn't really fit the structuring that you've got for the metadata, but you can just put a post-it note on and say, right, this is what's going on there. You can put any kind of annotation you want at any point in the video. And lastly, just in terms of actually filming content, it's not a matter of having a movie that you then add stuff to. It's more like you can create media for this format. So just like when you write a web page, you write things like click here to find out more or whatever. And web pages are different from books in that they know that they've got menus on them and hyperlinks and stuff like that. They can refer to themselves, they can refer to other websites and talk about them, and you can have criticism, you can have this one talking about another site and that kind of thing. So when you actually shoot the media, sometimes it's useful to have a presenter actually saying click now to find out more, to actually guide the viewer to do that, to follow the links, or to say, to refer to another movie in which they're going to talk about something else, or someone else is talking about things. So, tie it all together. It's worth thinking about it as, a new kind of way of playing with media. It's not just movies with text on them. So yeah, so basically, I mean, there's lots of other things that you can do with actually shooting videos and, you know, cutting videos together to make them interesting. That's something for, you know, video editing people to think about, how to make stuff not too boring or whatever. But yeah, think about it the same way that you think about web pages. I mean, everyone's well used to that by now. This is kind of a new concept, but you know, a lot carries across. Now, similarly, a lot of concepts from the web, from actual web technology, carries across. And this is what we're going to cover in the next hour or so. Basically, what we've got here is okay, this box here. There's a Linux box running Apache. What I'm going to go through is the configuration of Mod Anodex, the features that it implements, and why these things are all useful. Basically, Mod Anodex, which we've got here for both Apache 1.3 and Apache 2.0, is a handler for application Xanodex, and it can also optionally spit out CMML. So the reason you want to do that is to get summaries and searching and so forth, which we'll go into. It lets you do the timed offsets. So you've seen the kinds of URIs that we were dealing with before, where you might have a URL, you might have a just normal resource name, blah.anx, HTTP server, blah.anx, and then a query to a particular time offset. And by having a standard way of having that query, you can say, I want to go to this video at 10 seconds into it, or this point where I was watching and something interesting happened. You can generate a URI, you can request that URI, and if the remote server implements this functionality, which is, it's a core part of the Anodex standard to do that, if it does that, then it'll serve you the media from that point in time. I'll show you what that actually means physically as well. And the last thing it can do is give you the CMML based on what you ask for. So if you actually don't understand Anodex media, but you do understand CMML, you can ask us for that. Mod Anodex will give it to you. Okay, so that's a diagram of what's going on when you're asking for a particular time query. The web server has to generate that resource for you. In HTTP terms, that entire resource, including the query, is that's one resource. That's a different resource from fuchs.anx without the query. That's important when you're caching these things, because you index content based on the actual resource and a few HTTP header fields. To do the time queries, we've got the that's basically the structure of the file that we started the tutorial with, and that's an index file with a few media tracks, three media tracks, and some clips through it. And when we want to retrieve that particular resource with the time query for 7 seconds into it, what do we need to do? We need to retain all the beginning of stream pages. That's the ones which tell you what content type and granular rates and so forth each track has. We need to retain the secondary header pages, which are the codec setup stuff, so that if you actually want to play this content, you can. And remember here, we're designing a media format here, or this media format is designed for a network. And what that means is that a server can do stuff with it. Middle boxes, proxies and stuff can do stuff with it. It's only the viewer at the end which actually needs to decode the media. So what we've done is placed enough hints in all the boss pages and the first headers that these other non-player components can do useful stuff with it, can do this kind of thing without knowing how to decode the actual video content, for example. So there's a few really simple rules which are independent of the actual codec type. And these rules are they're in the standard, and they use the fields in the boss pages and so forth. Okay, so the rules let you do this kind of thing, which is this time queries. There's also recombining, where you can get a bunch of these, which we'll get into. You have to copy the clips across from the point in time that you're at. So you insert clips in as if you were viewing from that point. So what that means is you can copy that clip there across to there. If you remember that, that's what you had. And you retain the end so that the stream is well terminated. So what does the viewer actually see? When you watch this resource, when you watch the top resource, that's the entire thing. You're watching from the start, and then blah, blah, boring stuff, interesting stuff starts here, and you keep on watching. When you're watching the resource with the time query, you're just starting there. So obviously the media starts from there, and you see the person talking from that particular point. The annotations that are starting from there are the annotations that were there. So that annotation is active from there through to there. So you can copy it from there to mean that that's what you're actually seeing. The end result is simply that the viewer sees exactly what they'd see if they were watching the entire file from that particular seek time. But they don't need to download the first bit of the file. So it's restructured for them to give them exactly the same viewing experience. Another thing that I did mention, and I'll demo this in a sec. Actually, I think I'll just demo this live. That'll be the easiest. Go back here. Ah, oh, sweet. Okay. Excellent. Okay. This is a Linux box. And it's running two copies of Apache. It's running Apache 1.3 on Apache 1 on port 81 and Apache 2 on port 80. So if I go here, let's show you what we're on about here. There's some very exciting videos that that I took on my way to Narita Airport a few months ago. This is a video I took out a train window of some cargo going past. And I didn't think of some exciting annotations, so don't do annotations like this, they're really boring. But that's the kind of thing that you can see there. This is playing in Zine, so this is Zine hacked to actually support Pandex Media. This is a Theora file, Theora being ZIF.org's new video codec, with some Vorbis audio that you couldn't hear. It wasn't very exciting, it was train noises, trains moving along. Now, if we actually go here to the Telnet window, and see what happens when you do an HTTP1 request, you get the Nginx media straight out. That's great, that's exactly what you expect. Okay. If I want to view this file from a different time point, I'll just make this bit bigger so I can see what I'm doing. Okay. So we want to make a new URL from t equals 20 seconds, for example. Then we'll go to the server and we'll query that. And as you can see, the difference, you're seeing just the last few seconds of the file, not the entire file. So there were different bits of cargo going past just there. And we only saw the last 10 seconds of it instead of the whole 30 seconds or so. So the whole that whole thing of copying across the boss pages and the codec headers was done by ModAnodex. And then it was followed by the media of the last 10 seconds of the video. That was put together by ModAnodex on the server. It did that by looking at the original file, scanning through it, reading the initial bits, being able to copy that across, scanning through to exactly the point that you asked for by correlating all the different streams and stuff like that, and serving out the media from the point requested onwards. So that's the time, that's the time handling. And you'll notice then ModAnodex itself doesn't need to know anything about Fiora or Vorbis or Speaks or MPEG or whatever. All it needs to understand is the Anodex framing. So it knows how to deal with Anodex, it knows how to deal with boss pages, it knows how to seek through using the granule rates and the frame numbers of a file and rebuild it, copy it, find the bits it needs to make a new view of it. It can put that together. It can push it out across the network. At the other end of the network, a player can read it, and it can actually get the media data out and decode it, but nothing else along the way needs to know how to decode anything. So in this way, the Anodex format is completely independent of, this is why we say it's independent of the codecs. If you can Anodex something, then you can stick it on a server and a generic module can serve it out and serve out just the bits that people want. And that's that. Yeah, Andrew. Right. Okay. I'll flick over to, I'll answer the second part of your question first, which was what if you just wanted the annotations. What is this? Yeah, no. Right. So here's the structure of our stream, and again, you can see it's got might have multiple tracks in it, multiple media tracks. Now, let's say, for example, you've got two of the same audio track, one in English and one in Japanese, and you've got a video track along with that. So what you'd then want is for Apache to rip out just the video track you want and just the language track you want based on the accept language header in the HTTP request. And that's simply a matter of importing the tracks that you want from the original media. Mm-hmm. Not with ModAnodex, no. Right. No, that's correct. No, it may well be for you. So basically, there are many uses for having multiple streams. So you can use it for language negotiation, which means that the server just needs to be able to go, I'll have the bit that matches the language this person wanted. And you can do that by importing particular streams from another from your source files, which when we get into the program part, we'll show you how you can do that. So if you want to do custom dynamic generation, then it's possible to do that by building a small, even just a script that will do that. If you want CMML, then this is something that's a standard part of what we're Andex handling. So that is to say, if you want to request just the anchors from an Andex media file, Modandex will give you that, and that's a standard thing to be able to ask for. So why would you want this? Let's say you're a search engine and you don't understand media. You don't understand how to find interesting bits of information in media files in actual video content. But you do understand XML and you understand how to look at structured content. All you want is the CMML out of the file. The browser that Andre showed you earlier, which had a table of contents at the side, the way it actually requested that before starting to play the file was by requesting just the CMML and then being able to build up a table of contents and then requesting the actual index media and playing it for you. Now, of course, you can only do this if the file resides, if the file is a file. If it's a live stream, if I'm pointing camera around and I have that hooked up to a live annotating server, then, of course, I can't give you a summary of the annotation someone is going to type in 5 minutes' time. So that's not possible. But for a cache of existing Andex media files, you can do that. And the way you do that is very simple. It's just it's a standard part of HTTP, HTTP 1.1, to have a to specify what MIME types you can accept, and you can have explicit quality values. So you can say, I prefer being able to get image PNG rather than image GIF, for example. Here you can say, if you say that you prefer text CMML, XCMML, over application Anodex, then Modandex will give you the CMML. If I just switch over to this, I can show you that. Okay. So, where are we? Okay, so we've watched that video. We've seen what the annotations are, just lots and lots of buttons on that stuff. The video table? Sorry. Okay. Okay. So Apache 2. This will be Apache 2. I'm not that matters. Okay. So that file was Narita Express Cargo. Okay. So if I simply say I'd really prefer XCMML. I'll show you the full sort of syntax, so you can say that with a quality of 1. More than application Anodex. Then you get this. And what actually happens there is that what Anodex reads the Anodex file, and quite obviously it finds the CMML data, and it just gives you that. And it serves it to you as a valid CMML file. What's actually going on? Okay, so we've got these files there, pretty simple. There's a command line tool that comes with libandex, with the index tools, called anxrip. And that does exactly the same thing. So when you are building files, you can use anxrip. Exactly the same thing there. So I'll show you the code for anxrip later. And basically, exactly the same code is in mod Anodex. It's a very short amount of code, and you can use it in other programs to implement this kind of stuff and let you get CMML out of and Vex Media. You can strip it out and you get that. So if you're a search engine, you simply do the kind of request that you just saw, asking for this one here. Ask for text CMML rather than index, you get the CMML out. So again, the server doesn't know anything about the video, and the server doesn't have to have the original CMML file. All it needs is to have the index file there. So you can have a bunch of index files. You can treat each index file just as an individual object that you can, in a content management sense, you can store on a server, you can give to people, you can say, look, here is the index media file for you know, something that happened at my birthday party last week or something. I can give it to you on a CD. You can go and put it into your web directory somewhere. ModIndex can serve it out and give summaries to search engines and to people who want table contents and stuff like that without having to understand anything more, without having to understand what codec it's in or anything like that. Alrighty. The next slide that's on this box, I'll switch it over to it. It's unfortunate, one of the other rooms there was two video inputs, which would have made things a little easier. Not here. That's okay. Okay, so if you want to install ModIndex, it's really simple. It just does all the stuff I said automatically. Get ModIndex from index.net. So if you go to index.net now, if you're online, then you can go to the installation section and you can download a tarball. You can build it. It builds out of the box on Debian. You need to screw with the makefiles and fix APXS if you're on Red Hat or whatever. But it just works. And you load in just like any other Apache module. You can set it as a handler for particular files. And they'll be served by ModIndex, which means that if you request that file with queries, it'll be understood. And that's it. Very, very simple. Okay. Now, okay, so that's all the stuff just for serving a file. So you've got the server over here, and you've got a client over here that wants to play the file, wants to view it. Now, you can do, there are these rules for getting the first bit and getting a bit of the media. Now, you can extend that. You can have the first bit, which, for the purposes of this bit, we'll call the control section. The first bit of the file has the boss pages and the codec headers, and it's basically static. Any view of the file, by which I mean any timed view of it, will have the same control section. It'll have a different time base because it'll say this starts 7 seconds in or this starts 10 seconds in or whatever. But other than that, it'll be a static amount of data. So let's say that you're an ISP and you've got a bunch of customers who are all watching the same, you know, watching similar videos, just like they're reading similar HTML pages or whatever. But, you know, they might be watching different parts of them. Pretty simple. So you've got a pool. You've been storing the stuff that they've been watching. You've been caching it. You've got a pool of different views of the same files. So each one has, you know, obviously the control sections are about the same, but there's this bit of video from here to here, and there's this bit of video from here to here, and this bit over there is stored in your pool. What is possible now to do is serve a new request by taking some parts out of your pool, getting some parts by requesting the origin server, piecing them all together, and serving them to the user. So even though they're not watching exactly the same parts, and you don't want anyone to have to download the entire thing if that's not what they asked for, you can store stuff together, and you can piece it out to them. So this is just a general property of index media, that you can do that kind of stuff. You can recompose it in sort of automatic ways. So for a caching web proxy, which is the situation I just described, you're automatically, dynamically caching stuff. In a sort of content management point of view, you might use this this kind of architecture as an accelerator in front of the servers that are actually generating content for you, or something like that. So you can get an archive of, let's say, for example, you've got a camera, a webcam or something, and you're recording constantly snippets of live stuff that's going on. You don't want to have some infinitely large file, or you know, some huge file that's got everything that was recorded in front of this camera since 1985, for example. But you may well have a huge storage farm full of lots of little recordings of stuff that went on. And someone comes along and they say, I want to request off this archive server stuff that happened, you know, on the 17th of February, 1989 at 7 p.m. So you just come along and go, okay, no worries. Well, obviously I don't have, you know, a file for that, but I can reconstruct it by getting bits and bits and bits and bits and just keep serving it to you as long as you want. Pulling the bits out of the cache, assembling them into the stream that you're watching. As long as you get the correct time base at the start and all the codec headers and everything, the static control section, it can just feed out the other bits to you as you want them for exactly the bit you want. So that's that. So you can recombine this stuff really malleably. Yep. Right. Okay. So the question was, if you've got, if your subsections are made with different codecs. So you know, obviously that could happen if you encode them in different ways. In that case, they're not really. You'd have to view them not really as part of the same resource, right? So, if you have one file that you're splitting up into multiple parts, then that's one resource that you can recompose. If you've got two different files and two completely different codecs, then it's... Yeah, that's right, but that's in the code books at the start of the media. So there's a control section at the front where you can have, where you can variably have different compression parameters. That's part of the first part of the file. Through the file, you've got the actual media, which is compressed with those code books. So basically, if you have one file that is compressed, it's only got one set of code books, and then it's got the stream of video. Now, it's a general OGG thing that you can stop a stream entirely and start a new one with totally new serial numbers and so forth. That's the whole point of having the end of stream markers at the end of the file. So, so basically, if you're making a archive server or something, the thing I was just talking about, where you might be serving out lots of recordings, basically end to end, the way to handle that then would be to have to completely finish one stream, to have an end of stream for all the media streams you've got, and start new ones with new code books and the current time base and so forth. And that's a general property of the OGG formats. Okay. Now the last thing I'll just talk about here, Andrew earlier mentioned byte range combining with HTTP. And what we're working on with the Squid guys, with Rob Collins at least, is to do a way of doing this just using HTTP byte range stuff, which what that means is that with HTTP 1.1, you can request a particular resource from byte X to byte Y, and you'll get just that part back. And then as part of the HTTP proxying mechanism, it's possible to for proxies to do the kind of recombining that I was talking about, just with any resource whatsoever. So if you're requesting an entire resource, or from bytes 1 to a million, a proxy can go and get byte ranges, you know, from 1 to 10,000 and 20,000 to 30,000 or whatever, from the origin server and get the rest out of a pool that it's got already. That's part of the HTTP spec. As far as I know, nothing actually implements it yet. Squid doesn't implement it yet. But if that were to be implemented, which I'm told won't take too long, then all you really need is a way of mapping from the time request to the actual bytes that are there. So we're developing just a custom header for ANDEX retrieval, where if you implement this custom header, you can say, I just want to know the byte range for this. And what you actually retrieve is not the entire ANDEX file, but you retrieve the control section that you require for the bit you're viewing, plus the byte ranges to the original resource. So, just remembering here, the resource for the query t equals 7 is a different resource to the original query, just.anx. What that means is that if you've got a squid cache full of copies of stuff that people have requested, then you can't simply strip off the query and serve someone, basically a bit of someone else's request. It's a different request. Obviously, if it's a CGI script and, one's user equals Joe and the other one's user equals Sue, you can't give Joe Sue's stuff just because they requested the same file with a different query. It's a different query, it's a different resource. So you have to cache them separately, you have to index them separately against each other. But obviously with this, there is a lot of overlap. So you want to remember, you want to realize that there's a lot of overlap, you want to take that into account. So if you can get the byte range off the original resource that corresponds to the byte range that you're asking to the time you're asking for in the queried resource, then you can ask for that. What that means is you say, I want time from 10 seconds onwards, but I just want the byte range in the original resource. You make two requests. The first one, you ask for the query. You get told, cool, here's your control section. And what you really want to do is ask this other resource without the query for this particular byte range. You get that, you tack the two together, you play it. The user doesn't notice the difference, but in between, all the proxies that are seeing the actual media data are indexing that against the original resource name, against .anx without the query, which means that they can have all these little pools of byte ranges that they can then do range recombining on and serve out. So you get the full efficiency of HTTP 1.1 byte range combining without having to implement anything, without having to change the HTTP, basically. And you still get the same kind of requesting times and having them transferred into bytes with variable bitrate and all that kind of stuff, which is kind of cool. That's that. Search engines? Okay, I'll continue on with this. Are there any questions about this, about the part I just went through, which was server configuration and proxying and stuff like that? Anyone unclear about any of that? Okay, cool. Sorry? Gus? Cool. Yep. Mm-hmm. Right, okay. So the question was about variable bitrate. So if you've got a variable bitrate codec, like MPEG or whatever, and you can't simply say this point in time, you can't say 1,000 bytes means half a second or whatever. Right, so basically when you create an index media file, so when you do the ANX enking and so forth, that process can read codec headers. It can understand the timing, and it puts, when it gets a frame of media, it marks that with the particular frame number that it's got. So, when the server effectively seeks to a point in time, it can look through all the different streams and it can correlate exactly the time that any position is and find a byte offset for that. So the whole point, it totally handles variable bitrate. Mm-hmm. Okay, so question was dealing with huge files. Obviously, if you're going to have a server which is handling huge amounts of data like that, as with any kind of linear data store, you're not going to simply have one big file and scan through it to find stuff. I mean, the Yandex implementation, you know, it does, it'll do a ratio search through the file to find the path that you want, so, you know, it's efficient, but if you are dealing with, you know, terabytes of data, that's not the kind of thing you want to be doing. You do want to be having a backend which indexes against the store of data that you've got. So, yeah, you wouldn't use Modindex for that. You wouldn't use, you know, just you wouldn't have huge stores. You'd write a dynamic engine that can recompose that stuff for you. It's pretty easy to do, which I'll show you in a bit. Any other questions? Alrighty. Search engines are kind of cool. So, you know, obviously there's a few things that make the web work. You know, HTML is cool, and having URLs at all is cool. Being able to link from one place to another and write stuff and have users be able to surf around and find find text content. That's really cool. But one of you know, another part is search engines. Now, obviously, a search engine is not part of the core protocols of the web. It's not HTTP. It's not URIs. It's not HTML. A search engine is something else that sits out in the world and crawls around and finds interesting information and relates it to URLs and lets you know lets you type in queries and all the rest. So what we're doing here, you know, is the idea is to build a web of media. Let anyone make media and link it up to each other and you know surf on it, just like the web. It's just part of the web. That's all. And similarly, you need a way to actually search for this stuff. Now, because the media is linked to other media files, because you've got a media file linked to a media file linked to a media file and on, it's possible to crawl media files exactly the same as you can crawl HTML files. So a search engine needs to be able to do is find the annotations which have hrefs in them and crawl. Make a new query, make a new query, make a new query. So, can find that next media file, request the CMML in the way that I described before by using the accept header. The web server answers that URI and gives back just the CMML, and the crawler indexes that. Now, as we mentioned before, way before, the CMML is really similar to HTML. We designed that specifically, you know, with our search engine guys to actually make it trivial for search engine people to implement support for. So when they implement support for CMML, finally, it took, you know, a couple of days, if that, to do. So then their crawler could simply crawl index media. Yep. Right, absolutely. So the question is, how would a crawler crawlers implementers know to add that particular kind of accept header. So basically, if you ask for a particular resource for .anx, by default, it is of type application anodex. If you're a crawler and you download a huge media file like that, then sure, you can. If you can understand that file, then you can rip out the annotations client-side on the crawler and find the hyperlinks and index it like that. So in that way, that's the same kind of problem as indexing a PDF or a Word document or something. The crawler needs to be able to understand those formats and pull out the relevant information. So yes, that's that. So you know, it's simple. It is backwards compatible. If a search engine wants to provide support for crawling and index media, it's a fairly simple thing to do. If they go down the path of actually using SEPText XCMML, then they won't use as much bandwidth, and they'll just get CMML back, which is pretty simple to parse. It's very similar to HTML, so there's minimal work for them. If they don't want to go down the accept path, then they can choose to read the entire media file, which really just has the cost of bandwidth and a bit more processing, but you know, that's about it. Okay, so I'll describe the first three of those, I guess, which is doing the accept, finding the anchors to actually do crawling, indexing, which means finding the interesting information in the metadata. So you've got the titles and the meta tags. Remember, there are meta tags in the head, and there can also be meta tags on any clip through the file, so you can do really structured information about the content in the file. And to actually display it prettily, you can use the description tag to give a bit of a longer summary if it's there. You can have the image tag, which gives you a bit of a keyframe. So again, that's a screenshot of the Panoptic results for some kind of search, radio galaxies on, you know, stuff that we've got from the science web. And yeah, it's pretty. You can see the results. You can immediately get an idea of what you're going to be viewing, and see the text that's there. So at the end of the day, it's just a normal search engine result, but it's, you know, it has support for the media. And you can imagine this is also, or this is a normal HTML search engine with extensions for media support. So if you do a query, generally, you'll get some HTML pages and you'll get some media pages. You can refine your search, you can search on particular meta tags and publishers and authors and stuff like that if you want as well. And it all just works, very simple. Now we're going to get into some coding. So we're going to actually show you how to build stuff, how to build tools that use this stuff, how to build dynamic websites and so forth. The guts of that, we need to get through the actual APIs. And we'll start with Sylvia going through libcmml.
Thanks. Yeah, libcmml is my baby. Kind of split it up a bit, and I'm happy to present my API there. So what we've done with our libraries, because this is all very much a temporal thing, so you're getting stuff here, you're getting stuff there, and at certain points in time something should happen. We've based this all on a callback-based implementation paradigm, so we've made for libcmml, which does, oh yeah, maybe I should say what libcmml does first. So libcmml is a library that parses and validates CMML files. It uses XPath to do the XML stuff, but it does more than that. It also looks whether all the tags are correct, whether all the elements are correct, all the attributes are correct. It checks whether the values make sense. It checks whether the clips come in the right sequence, right order, and these kinds of things. So what it does is it goes through a CMML file from top to bottom, gets one tag at a time, and checks it. And in order to check the tags, there's three different types of callbacks that are relevant, because it's such a simple structure. There's one callback for the stream tag, one callback for a head tag, and there's one callback for a clip tag, which gets activated for each of the clip tags I'm going through. And in order to write a little program that does CMML stuff, CMML parsing, all you need to do is say you've got a file, you do a CMML open on the file name, it opens it, it creates a CMML object, knows all the background stuff about the CMML object, and then you can do a CMML write in a loop. You just sit there reading bits, CMML read in a loop, you read bits. Before that, you've registered your callbacks, so whenever that read loop hits the end of a stream tag, the stream callback gets activated, and you as a user have put something into the stream tag, what to do when it hits a stream tag, or a hit tag, or a clip tag. And at the end, you just do a CMML close and done. Yeah, and it says check out the documentation, so let's just do that. Idemo. So all our libraries have Doxygen documentation, all written in Libraries are all written in C. And this is directly out of one of the directories there. So this says what CMML validate looks like, CMML fix, CMML fortune, CMML fix fixes sloppily written CMML files. So because libcmml can pass these things and find out stuff that you've done wrong, can also correct some of the things that you've done wrong. And so it takes a CMML file that you've written, maybe left out some of the tags that are absolutely necessary, and it'll fix it up for you if it can, and write out a file that is correct. And fortune, which we saw before, will just create a CMML file out of the blue for you. Every 5 seconds, it puts in a clip, and then goes off. So maybe, shall we just start with this one? Where's the sources? So there's a few, in the examples directory here, there's a few example files. And the CMML pass file just shows you what to do in order to pass a CMML file. That up there is the read head, is the head callback. All it does is it prints out the title tag of the head. There's the main function. There's an fopen there. This one actually takes a file pointer as an input, CMML new. And then it sets the read callback, goes in its read loop, which activates the callback at the right time, and prints out the title tag, and ends it again, CMML destroyed, close the file, done. That's as simple as it can get for passing a file and handling a CMML file. Any questions, please interrupt me. So it does also seeking. libcmml also provides a seeking interface. So this one here does a seeking to a specific clip ID, which is implemented there, skip to ID. You open the file, then you skip to the ID tag, and then you activate your read callbacks from there, which in this case, what does this one do? It's a clip and prints out the description tag, that particular clip that you were looking for, and done. Simple as that. Seeking for an offset, same way, and seeking for a UTC time, you can do the same way. So the offset is a temporal offset. This is about opening a remote file, so you can also do that with a remote file. What does it do? Oh yeah, this one gets the fragment out and passes the file in URI and gets the different sections of the URI out. Then when you read a clip, it writes out the description tag again. And here it is a pass file. So what it does is it opens the URI pass. This is what you basically do on the server. So you just open your file here. Get that request in, say, in a CGI script, or you get it in the module. You pass the URI, HTTP URI. Then you strip out the path, do a CMML open on that, and off you go, handling it. That's what this one demonstrates. Right, CMML validate. We don't have CMML fortune in here, bummer. But CMML validates in there, and you can see how short that is. All the usual crap, print version stuff. So there's the read stream, the stream callback. That one just is a pretty print or a print on the stream tag. Prints out the stream tag again that it has passed. The head tag prints out the head tag again. Clip tag, the clip tag, obviously. And get up. Parameter passing. You can open read from standard in CMML as well. So you can type things there. And yeah, CMML open or new, whatever you get. Turn on sloppy parsing if that was in the parameters. Print the preamble and go through. Skip to an ID if you wanted to. Skip to the time offset. Register your callbacks. Go through the read loop. That's here. That's all the read loop here. That's very short. Do the CMML read. If there's an error, print out the error. Otherwise, it'll activate the callbacks. Print out all the content, and you're done. So with the, as you can see, with the callback interface, it's really, really simple to handle CMML files. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that. And hand over to Conrad again, who can talk about LibAnalytics, which is his baby.
Okay, I'll give you a of LibAnalytics. Okay, so just like libcmml gives you like a really quick interface for dealing with CMML files. You can open them up and read them out and that kind of thing in very few lines of code. LibAnalytics does the same kind of thing for reading Anadex files and for writing Anadex files, or writing Anadex bitstreams, at least, which involves a few things. So for reading, we've got... I'm going to switch to Oxygen Docs here, actually. Sweet. Okay. If you're reading index media, so you want to be able to scan through a file, or you know, scan through stuff that's coming in off the network, for example, and get the media data and play it, and get the annotations and surf through them, stuff like that. Here's a really simple program that reads a file or a file descriptor or whatever, and does stuff with it. Now this one, that's the entire program there, right? All that does just attaches to the callback for reading the CMML head that comes out of it. And reads data out of the file. So ANC's open the file name in read mode means that this is the file you're reading. Could be a file descriptor getting off the network or whatever. Set a callback for reading the head. Similarly, you can set a callback for reading clips. You can set callbacks for reading raw media out of the media frames. What happens then is that whenever a media packet comes along, your callback gets called. You get told what track it's in, and you get given the callback the media data. Then you can do stuff with it. Pretty simple. The while loop there is just reading data, so that's reading a k of data at a time out of this file. So if you're, for example, getting stuff in off the network, you don't know anything about it. All you know is that you've got this stream of bytes coming in. So you set up an index reading object, you feed bytes into it, and then as it parses your stuff, it'll call your callbacks. I found the head. I'll call your head callback. I found some clips. I'll call your clip callback. You can find out where the anchors are and stuff. Found some media, found some audio data, found some video data. It'll just call your callbacks for you. So you just sit in the loop feeding data to it, and it will let you know what went on where really, really simply. So you just write little callbacks to get media and play it, or to get the clips and make surfing happen. On the writing side, obviously it can be a little more complex. So when you're writing Anadex media, you're getting source media from somewhere, which might be an MPEG file or an Aura file or whatever, and you need to scan through that file. You need to be able to say, you know, at this byte position it's at time 10 seconds, and at this byte position it's at time 20 seconds or whatever. So you need to be able to parse the media stuff. You don't need to do anything more with it. You don't need to be able to decode the video frames or whatever. You just need to be able to pass through it. And to do that, Libanindex has plug-in importers. These importers can understand media formats. So there's a plug-in for understanding YOG formats, which understands OGG, Theora, Speaks, and Vorbis. There's a plugin for sound files using Eric's Lib sound file. We've got one for MPEG as well. And basically what that means is that if these things are on the system, then you can create index media out of these formats. You simply start off by saying, okay, init all importers, **, doing that by a MIME type match. So you can say just init all video importers or whatever if you want, or init a particular importer if you're doing a specific application and you don't want to, you don't want the overhead of loading them all. You create an index writing object this time, so angst open the output file in write mode, so that's the file that you're actually writing. You import into the writer. So if you're looking at doing recombining or getting in multiple tracks of different kinds of media or whatever, all you need to do is you're setting up the writing object. You're saying, okay, at time 0 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever, I'll want to import this MPEG file, this OGG Theora file or something like that. And then you say, and then at time 20 seconds, I'll want to import this other file from over here. So you set up the sort of scheduling of what you want, what you'll want the file to have in it. And then you insert clips. So you make up clips. I think that's just one statically defined in this. It just generates a clip here, which just has an href, to index.net, and that's all. Then it calls insert clip to insert that one, and then to clear it at 2 seconds. So you're setting up what you want the file to kind of look like. When you've got that set up, or while you're doing stuff, then there's just a write loop, and that just writes out bytes of data. So you don't want to write out, if you're writing like something that's spitting stuff out to a network, like modindex or something. Once you've set stuff up, you don't want to know anything more about it. You don't want to know that you need 1,043 bytes in the next packet or whatever. You don't want to have to know what you're up to. All you need to know is how to spit up bytes. So you say, right, I've set up all this writing. I want to have this file here and that file there and these anchors here, there, and there. Cool. Okay. Give me the next K data. Give me the next K data. And you spit that out over the network. At any point in time, while you're writing, while you're in that write loop, you can still insert new anchors. So if you've got media coming in off a live camera or something, then as you're indexing it and you're spitting out, you're going, okay, angst right, ooh, insert anchor, right, keep angst right, insert another anchor, angst right, and you spit out data. You can just keep on doing that on and on. When you're done, you close it and you're done. It's really that simple. So the guts of angst enc is basically this kind of thing where it simply takes in the input files on the command line, CMML files or media files or whatever, sets up a writer object, imports them in, and spits out data to the output file. The whole importer mechanism is, it's all dynamic, it finds the plugins for you. There's also a plugin for, obviously there's a plugin for CMML as well, which can read CMML files, and it will in turn import the files that you're referencing in the CMML file. So it'll set up this writer object as the CMML file describes. That can be hierarchical, so you can have CMML files that import other CMML files and stuff like that, which can be...
instead of building something which is quite straightforward and
works again. Sorry, give me a minute. Ooh, very loud now.
Right, so instead of just demultiplexing it into video, audio, and something else, what you might need to do in some cases is feed the output of one demultiplexer into the input of yet another demultiplexer. So if we go to this diagram, here is, this is for OGG stuff, OGG's nice and simple, which is great. So here you just split it up into, for instance, Theora for the video, and Volvis and maybe Speaks for some audio channels. And CMML, but in some cases, say MPEG, it might get slightly more complex, because what happens then is that if you got MPEG inside an MDX media file, what happens is that if you got MPEG itself is an encapsulation format. So most MPEG players work by saying, okay, I know how to play MPEG video, I know how to play MPEG audio, and they have multiple threads running, so they do it concurrently. And you've got this other thread, which actually just sits there and feeds those two things, right? So what you actually want to do in this case is have an Anodex demuxer, which basically just rips the MPEGs out of the Anodex file, and then that has to, you have to send the output from the Anodex demuxer, which is the actual MPEG stream. You send that out to an MPEG demuxer, which can then split out into video and audio. So to do this, you really want a graph architecture for this, where you can build a graph of objects and multiplex, demultiplexes and all this kind of stuff. For some media frameworks do this well, some don't. If they don't do it well, you can always fall back to trying to do it, maybe changing your codecs, or possibly you'll have to do some reworking of the media framework to properly handle Anodex media. But it's not too bad. What I'll try and show you now is, I'm going to go back to my box and show you some of the stuff I did to VLC very quickly to try and get to support Anodex Media. Yay, good old Megatron. Oops. Right. Okay, so here we've got VLC, which is the CVS version. First I'll show you the patches which I did against there, just because they're not all that long. So for instance, here's the diff file for what we had to do to the current OGD multiplexer to try and put Anodex support in there. It's not too long. This stuff here is mostly all the stuff that you see in red here right now is basically just moving a couple of functions around the file. So while it looks big, it's actually just like being moved from the bottom to the top and placed into its own function. So here's all the stuff which is Anodex specific. This is just stuff to read the Anodex headers in there and pull the streams out. But if I exit this, and I mean, you can see from the size of these files that, you know, most of these are not very large. The CMML demuxer is, 16K. Well, sorry, 13K, and the interface to handle the, user pressing return to jump to another Anodex file and stuff, that's only 13K, and that's written, you know, that's from scratch. So it's not very large. That's basically all I want to show you there, actually. That's about all for me. So, jump back to the slides. And with that, we'll start talking about slightly more interesting stuff, which is the dynamic content creation. So, I'm ready for that.
Cool, okay, so this is about the last 10 minutes or so of this, I think. We'll be finishing up soon, but dynamic content creation is sort of where all this sort of comes back to. So we went through the APIs, libcml and libamdex, they're C APIs. There are, as mentioned before, Python and Perl bindings in the works. So Benno and Gus, respectively, been working on that. And what that means is then you'll be able to do something like a CGI, which uses, say, the Python or Perl bindings to generate index media, just doing, you know, open a file and import something and write it out, but doing that in a nice Python or Perl-y way. And simultaneously, you know, access a database and pull clips out of here, or you know, find the media that you want from a database reference or something like that. React to the actual query, make more interesting things that, you know, get stuff based on CGI variables or, you know, based on the user's preferences and things like that. Create the content on the fly for the user. So some examples of these. A news bulletin is something that we worked on, that worked on with ABC and so forth, where you might have, you know, when you watch the TV news or you watch a highlight of the news, you'll just have someone talking about, you know, today this and that happened. Normally I come up with an example, but I've got no idea what's been going on in the world recently. But, you know, they'll talk about 30 seconds about, or 10 seconds about a story, and then you'll watch the actual footage that the journalist went and shot of that story. And then you'll see another, then you'll go back to the news anchor talking for, you know, 10 seconds about another story, then you'll see the footage for that. With an Anindex news bulletin, what you can have is just news anchor, news anchor, news anchor, news anchor, so you can watch, you know, 30 seconds or so, see a full summary of the day's news. If you're interested in something, then you click on that and you watch that story. If you're really interested more, then maybe, you know, at the end it goes, if you want to find out what happened, you know, John Howard last week, then you click on that and you watch some story from last week and you keep on digging back through a story or through related stories or whatever. Now, this is exactly the same as what happens with the web. So if you go to your local newspaper's website, the front page will be something that's dynamically generated that just has, you know, a paragraph about each of the day's top stories. If you're interested, you read more, you go and read that story. There's no one sitting there, you know, typing in brand new HTML pages every 5 minutes when new news stories come in. The news stories are just fed into a database with, you know, a reference to the actual story it's going to be, and this is the leading text for it, and this is the actual story. It's just recomposed. So when you go to the newspaper site, it goes and pulls out the stories from the database, grabs some ads from over here or whatever, you know, grabs the jokes and the weather from the bottom, and gives that to you as HTML. Using this kind of stuff, you can similarly just get the bulletins of intros to news stories. So these are the latest 10 stories that have come in, and you watch that. If any of them are interesting, they've already got hyperlinks in them to the full set of that story, so you can generate news bulletins on the fly. Video blogging is something we've obviously been talking about a bit, which is, or describing the possibility of. So you can shoot hours and hours and hours of inane footage of your daily life and put that up onto a blogging server, and then someone can come along and they can watch, you know, this recording of everything you've done for the last month or whatever, and just keep on watching it. When you go to a blog site in HTML, as reading someone else's blog, it'll pull out their, you know, blog entries day by day from their diary and all the links they've had and all that other crap. It'll make that for you on the fly. Similarly, if you go and upload, you know, here's the stuff I took today, here's what I recorded, here's who was in there, you know, you're writing something about your friends or whatever, attach that to the video, put that into your blog with, you know, just the normal sort of blog management interface that you'd be used to if you're blogging. When someone comes to view it, they're watching video, and they've got all your annotations in there, you know, and then you can have all the sort of searching and permalinking and all that kind of stuff straight to bits of video, and then, you know, do all the whole sort of blog feeding stuff to actually make, you know, channels of people's lives and groups of friends' lives and that kind of thing. But basically, the idea here is that these things, you know, news, blogging, they're stuff that we're now, you know, totally used to with HTML. And this just lets you do that kind of stuff with video. So it feels different to use it. You know, video can be, I won't say more powerful, but, you know, a different medium than text. So you can record stuff that, you know, is harder to record in text. It's easy to sit down and just watch someone's videos of stuff. So it's just like watching TV, but you know, generated for you all on the fly. The top one here is a crazy idea that Benno had when we were talking about this at Sligo at a CodeFest a few months ago, which was to, and it's actually what inspired him to go and do Python bindings, is to actually have like you're watching a movie, is that right? Something like that, yeah, so a group of mates are sitting around watching a movie, and that's the video feed that's going in, and then they're sitting there just chatting on IRC about it. And so you have an IRC bot that sits there listening to the stuff that they're typing in and getting the video feed and combining them together and spitting out, you know, a live feed of this annotated movie, you know, or a webcam of stuff that's going on that everyone's just chatting about. You know, how simple is that? How cool is that? And yeah, you know, so that inspired him to go and write Python bindings, and it's probably, what is it, day's work or something, isn't it, to actually write that kind of bot? About that. There you go. I can't wait for it. How would you do this? So, getting back to the code, you know, pretty simple. So you make an index write object. You insert a head tag maybe saying like, you know, this is the title of this, you know, today's news, or Benno's thoughts about this movie or something like that. You grab your video data, or you grab a reference to the video data. You grab anchors and news bits and stuff like that. Just like when you see CGI programming, you know, you get this stuff to make a paragraph, you get this stuff to make the next paragraph or whatever. Here, you just go and make a query, you make a clip out of it, you get another query, you make a clip out of it, you feed that in, and you just spit out Anadex Media. You just do an ANX write loop, you spit it out, the user gets Anadex Media. They don't know that it's been dynamically generated. I mean, obviously they're not stupid, but, you know, just like when you request a web page, you just get HTML and a story. Read it, it displays in any kind of browser. So a player that can read index, that can play Anadex Media and can do HTTP, it doesn't need to know what's going on at the other end. It doesn't need to know that there's some huge archive or IRC bot watching movies and stuff like that going on. It doesn't need to know that there's all these proxies between it and that. It just gets a stream of Anadex Media at the end of the day and it can play it, bang. So yeah, so the whole point is that all the kind of cool dynamic stuff we're used to with the web, we can do with video. This one, we're talking about the CMML. So if we're talking about content management, and you want to be able to say, you know, get some video from this file over here and some audio from that file over there, and there might even be remote links, you can generate CMML, which would find that stuff for you. So here we've got. From the amazing sites flim.org and foo.bar, some audio and video that we're recombining in new and exciting ways, and we're getting something that some silly LinuxConf AU speakers have done, and we're putting it all together into this awesome Anadex video about the Linux conference. Now, what you can do here is you're creating CMML to describe how something would be combined, and then you can have that sitting on a server which has just got Modanadex pre-processing to spit out stuff, so you can separate the CMML content creation and the actual Anadex Media creation into sort of two separate steps for security or distribution reasons or whatever. It's a bit more advanced, but it's the kind of stuff you can do. So you can make distributed architectures for building media. I think we'll sort of be wrapping up there. I'll pass back to Sylvia. Sorry, any questions about dynamic content creation before we go? Excellent. So yeah, you can all be coding on this stuff real soon in well, already in C and real soon in Perl and Python as well.
Yeah, so we're basically through with the tutorial. I'm just going to give going back over the things in a bit of a summary, but I guess is there any questions about any of the parts that we've done? Which are, come on. Oops. That's the parts. So we've gone through giving you an introduction of what the idea was behind the continuous media web. We wanted to make the web searchable and surfable for time continuous data, audio and video especially. We've shown you the KickAss browser of Andre on OS X. And we've given a little search engine interface. There's a link on our web pages to the search engine itself. We currently need to get stuff re-indexed because we've changed the format end of December, so it's currently not running, but it should be soon. We've given a long, long detailed look into the specifications. Really actually looking at everything that we have written in our internet drafts, and they're all up at IETF for discussion. We've seen the demo of live unindexing, how we did that with the video camera, Conrad's video camera. Andre did that very nicely and with his 2.5T phone. That was great. We've looked into server admin. I think you haven't shown how to install a mod anadex, but have you? Talked about it, yeah. But that's all very simple to do. If you know how to install modules, it's just a standard way. A bit of proxying there as well, search engines, and we looked into the APIs of the different libraries, and an outlook into dynamic content creation, what we think it'll be like in the future. So is there any questions on any of those bits? Yeah. Why are the browsers not downloadable? So we've got the OS X browser, which is Andre's really nice one. That is based on QuickTime, but has a bit of a hack in it. So there's something we need to fix up before we can publish that. We're currently working on a browser for Windows. So there's one more person back in Sydney currently hacking on a Windows version for it, an Internet Explorer plugin. That should come out within the next month. It's expected to be ready by mid-February. There is Andre's VideoLAN extension or VideoLAN framework support, which then will need a front end, a nice front end like the one that he's done for OS X. That's still to be done, and we just want to make things more pretty before we go out because it's just very, very raw at the moment. That's VideoLAN. Conrad has implemented the Xeen support, and it's at approximately the same state as the VideoLAN one. We also want to make that prettier, or he wants to make it prettier before going out with it. So we're working on a lot of things there, and they're all in the pipeline, coming out, I guess, in the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the last thing I did. You're also working on this stuff
to implement everything. And, by having support in the frameworks, it's, like, for example, with the Xeen or the VLC stuff, suddenly, there's 20 different players that can play the format. It's another thing then to actually have the browsing support as well to do back and forward and that kind of thing. And there are some, it's a bit hard to integrate that with the playlists that Xeen and VLC have. So we need to work with those people to actually to make that not suck as much. But basically like now when you surf, at least like in the Xeen thing, for example, if you click on a hyperlink, it will attach that link to the end of the playlist and then stop playing the current file, which means you sort of drop down to playing the next one, which is kind of hackish, and it really doesn't fit into the whole surfing paradigm of going backwards and forwards and forgetting where you've been when you go somewhere else and stuff like that. So so there's bits of work, but the hard bit was actually getting it into the framework. So now we can play the video and we can do the captions and see what's playing. It's just a matter of doing nice interfaces on top of that. So the last draft of the standards came out on December 31st, I think, and that's all sort of standards and library stuff down, and now it's applications now, so server stuff and libraries and that are all there.
So there's different things you need to distinguish, I guess. There's the authoring side of things. And when you're talking about... Are you just talking about the browsing side of things? I would say plugins are really important because you just want to be able to view it within your browsing your browser. And I think it's really important because of the history. So when you're browsing from a video to a text page, back to a video, and so on and so forth, you're hitting the back button, you really want to have that same history again. You don't want to be in a separate application having a history of having browsed through video stuff, and then you have a history in your browser having surfed through HTML pages. I think that should be a combined history, and that's why plugins are important. Yes, I agree. But but on the other hand, video players should be also able to support it, especially like if there's, say on Windows, the Windows Media Player would have Anadex support. So when we do the Direct Show plugin for Windows Media, then it'll be able to display Anadex files with the codecs that it has. But of course, it doesn't have this whole potential of additional stuff that we have, like displaying hyperlinks, like displaying table of contents, like displaying descriptions, like displaying metadata. All of these things won't be there, but at least the player can play back the file. I guess that is important as well, but I think that's, on the long run, that'll just disappear somehow, or it'll be integrated into those players. But I don't think that's a task for up to us. That's probably a task for up to the people who are doing those players.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so I mean, like, you know, similar, like, you know, supporting GStreamer would be cool. Totem can use both Xen and GStreamer at the moment, can't it? Yeah, so Totem would be able to just play Index Media now using the OgDemuxer I've got, which I'll put into Xen CVS real soon. And Totem with navigation would be a rocking good browser. Similarly, we want to do GStreamer Index plugins, which, like Andre was saying, would just be a matter of having a Demux plugin, an Andex Demux plugin, and then and a CMML plugin for actually handling the annotations and stuff. And then any GStreamer stuff could use this as well. Yeah, I mean, Totem with Andex would rock. Yeah. Another toolbar, back and forward, easy.
Our last comment as well. Sorry. We are wrapping up, really. Okay, so at the moment, I think you're all familiar with media players where you've got playlists, right? The main problem that we're having and we're trying to work out with developers with Xen and Videoland is really that if you have a playlist, it's not a browser. If you have a browser, it's not a playlist. So going back and forward is jumping, you know, is a different thing to having a playlist of set things which you view in order. I mean, think about a browser. You open it up, you surf around for a while, or maybe quite a while in my case usually, and then you quit it. But if you've got a media player, usually you want to play a couple of files and that's it, and then you're done. So if anybody's got any ideas on how to actually integrate you know, the back and forward idea of web browsing with a playlist where you go up and where you can jump around and you have to save it, things like that, then please let us know, because that is that's been the main problem so far and why we haven't pushed stuff up so much in the CVS. Yes, Gus. Maybe, but then you start needing to integrate browser functionality into all the current media players, so you need back and forward buttons and all that kind of stuff. So this is a thing where, you know, it's a design problem. It's not really a technical problem, but it's something which we want to fix before we go and push all the stuff into CVS, because if we don't fix it, then people are going to look at it and go, oh, wow, you know, you can jump around, but it's not like web browsing. It's nowhere near as cool as web browsing, which is what we really want to do. If it appears in a set-top box anytime soon, then that would be pretty rocking. We originally designed Anadex stuff to work on, you know, really simple consumer electronics. So something like a set-top box which understands Anadex media, a DVD player, for instance, which is, you know, slightly more advanced to handle this stuff. You can be watching files, and then you can just have a little remote control and go, bang, follow, hyperlink. So yes, definitely, we really would like that. Does that answer your question? Right, and I mean, all we really have to do is sort of integrate the support into mPlayer, then people like KISS can pick it up for free, right? Yeah. two more questions? Yeah? So we tell you, but we have to kill you. No, hang on.
No, this is very simple. So ABC Broadband has streaming media online, and that runs over, I think, with the real network stuff. So they've actually, like, we've talked to the people who set that up, and they said it's a pain to set up. It took them very long to actually get it working. And so with the real player, what they've had to do is actually completely develop that whole interface thing of a player, of the annotations and the shots on the side. That is all a custom-made thing specifically for their news site. When they made a different thing for the kiddie stuff, they made a different layout, and it's a completely different site. All of that stuff is basically, so to speak, standardized in the way we are handling things. And it makes life so much easier for them if there is a standard way of browsing those things. They just need to write the content. They don't have to reinvent the user interface every time all over again. They actually said it's interesting that they have come up with a similar interface to what we've come up with, completely independent of each other. And they showed it to us and they said, look, this is great because you're actually thinking the same way that we're thinking. So this question is about scalability, and I think we've all seen that the web is scalable, and this just hooks into the web infrastructure. So in the same way in the same way that the web is scalable, this is scalable as well. Sorry? Yeah, I can do all of these things.
You can inject advertising on the fly into Analytics Media now.
Yeah, we can do mass-specific advertising. That was something else I wanted to say about before, when I mentioned authoring tools. So what I'd really like to see, and it's kind of interesting that all of these tools that do authoring of media stuff, so if Premiere or something like that, they all have kind of a way of annotating clips. They all have a way of thinking about hyperlinks and stuff, and everyone has their own proprietary format. And iMovie has the same thing. iMovie has clips, and you can put annotations in there and things like that. It'd be really simple for these people to extend that interface just a little bit with the tags that we've got and export Analytics Media. And that's kind of the way that we're thinking it'll go, because it's really simple to do it. Then we've got a common interchange format and